Mason.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan, wrapping up another week of NFL action. This is week five. This is a big week in the NFL. I think this is the week where you finally hear teams are pretty much being eliminated. This is the official stick a fork in them week because there are some people we know are just done and gone. That's not including some key injuries at some spots. So pay a lot of attention to these recaps. There's a whole lot going on. We're going to start it out with the Sunday night game. All right, this is Justin. I'm here with James, the Texans superfan. James, your Texans lost to the Kansas City Chiefs by a final score of 42-34. Why don't you walk us through this game? Let's be honest, a lot went on in this game.
Yeah, a whole lot went on in this game, and I don't think, I'd be one of the lucky people to actually walk through this game just after that opening quarter. A lot of people were having issues just walking. From the very opening kickoff, Kansas City had a guy down with injury. They did a very good job of just kind of marching down the field. Alex Smith in the preview show with Nick, I basically said, as long as we can keep him contained and not dashing to the outside and buying some extra time, we should be fine. But sure enough, the Chiefs end up going on the evening on meaningful third downs. I believe they went like 8-for-12 on third downs. And that's exactly what they did. They would hit long first down play after long first down, just by Smith rolling out right and, buying some time for his receivers to get open. So they go up early with that nice, field goal. And, on that drive, we lost Whitten Merciless. So, that was good. He was out with some sort of chest injury. The big injury, of course, was J.J. Watt, and it's something to do with his knee, a broken bone in his knee, which does not sound good. And from that point forward, after losing Merciless and Watt, the defense looked a bit shell-shocked. They did a pretty good job of the whole bend-don't-break, limiting Kansas City to three field goals and a touchdown, and it started to look very similar to that playoff game from two seasons ago where the Chiefs took a 13-0 playoff or 13-0 halftime lead and then turned it into a 30-0 drubbing. But then Deshaun Watson came back, got us a quick touchdown with his final drive of the half. And, he made some good plays, made some good throws. And once that kind of established itself, it looked like Houston actually had a chance in this game. Andy Reid managed to not mess up clock management that badly in the end of the first half. He saved his team, about a minute and a half, minute 40 for Alex Smith. And, I would not have thought this possible last season, but you give Alex Smith a minute 40, man, you're going to live to regret that decision. They ended up getting another touchdown before the end of the half there. Second half, mostly more of the same. Deshaun Watson, it looked like the offense was definitely trying to pick up the defense. Defense finally seemed to kind of get their heads back in the game after the two early game injuries. But, it was just too little too late at that point. Watson made some good plays. As you mentioned, on the final score of the game was only 8 points, but this was easily a 2 or 3 possession game just based on how it played out. About 7 minutes left in the game, Texans were down by 2 scores. And, as the punt sailed off, I'm sitting there thinking, well, that was stupid. Why do we even punt the ball? Because, down 2 scores with 7 minutes left. And as if I was, my pessimism was being channeled into the players, Tyreek Hill returned that one for a touchdown. Just definitely sealing the game. This is where the biggest frustration of the entire game comes into play. And I'm sure that, Kansas City Chiefs fan Nick is going to be even more frustrated by it. So now the Texans are down, 16 points. They decide to go for an onside kick, which was, you know, foolish in and of itself. There, Chris Conley for the Kansas City Chiefs ended up, it looks like, possibly tearing his Achilles. It's really bad when Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are like, oh, I've never seen a tendon or a muscle or part of a leg actually do that before. so it looked bad on replay, and, you know, I feel bad about it because, you know, the Texans had already kind of signaled, look, you know, we're not really going to keep trying from here on out after, you know, after that punt, and then decided, oh, wait, maybe we should actually try. I was honestly really waiting for either Watson to get hurt or Hopkins to get hurt or, you know, anybody else on the offense when they're running a hurry-up offense with less than a minute to go down by 2 scores. One of the really frustrating parts with that is even after they get the touchdown with no time left on the clock, instead of just, you know, kicking the field goal or kneeling it, they line up and go for two. And, you know, you're just asking for trouble at that point. You know, you're already leaving the game out merciless, possibly out Watt or likely out Watt for a very extended period of time, if not the rest of the season. Like, why not just cut your losses and instead of saying, oh, well, you know, we managed to make it an 8-point game, just kind of live with the fact that you're going to lose by 2 scores. It's not like this is college, Bill O'Brien, and you have to keep your margin of victory or margin of defeat small and impress the pollsters. You know, every loss kind of counts the same here.
Yeah, so let's talk about that real quick, because I don't think we covered that in too much detail. That injury to J.J. Watt, it sounds pretty ominous. Just from what I read on Twitter, it sounds like he's going to be in a cast for at least the next 8 weeks, so definitely the season is gone. Between his back injury and now this knee injury, will we see J.J. Watt again, and will we see the J.J. Watt from 2012 through 2015 again?
I mean, you will see J.J. Watt again. He's too kind of stubborn to ever, you know, hang it up. Also, with the types of injuries that he's been having, it's not like a Luke Kuechly Luke Kuechly problem here, where, you know, he's getting concussion after concussion, and, you know, seriously questioning whether or not this is going to have long-term neurological impacts. You know, he'll come back. Whether or not he'll ever be the, you know, multi defensive player of the year is, you know, that's likely gone. Also on the preview show, we talked about how, you know, Watt as kind of the destructive force isn't something you should really bank on anymore. And allowing Watt to still, or kind of, I guess, pretending as if Watt will still be that destructive force is something that's really holding the Texans defense back, or potentially holding the Texans defense back. Because without Watt last year, you know, there was a step down in their play, but it wasn't a precipitous drop-off like everybody was predicting. And a lot of that has to go with Watt kind of dictates where he wants to blitz, where on the line he wants to line up at. And it really forces a player to play a position that they're not nearly as comfortable with or not nearly as skilled at. So, you know, they'll adjust. They played the full season last year, nearly the full season last year without him, so it's not like it's so far removed. But I think, you know, the days of fearing J.J. Watt to the point of, you know, treated like the Von Miller of today, I think those days are gone at this point. Not to say he's not still going to be a lot of knots in that sentence. That isn't to say that he still can't contribute or still won't be able to contribute in the future. He will definitely be able to do that, but I don't think he'll be able to have him as the cornerstone of your defense.
All right, well, there you have it once again, the Chiefs victorious over the Texans. James, thank you.
And Nick, any thank you to the Nick who's here in the show as well?
Hey, now, you didn't answer me when I asked if that was you. And on the little chat thing, it says Daniel Coaster connected at 908, which is Dan, the Colts fan.
Oh, that's weird. Either way, I just called in.
I noticed. So yeah, I think we're good.
Right. You guys.
Right. I called in for nothing. Okay.
That's what I was trying to. Well, I was going to throw it to you if I knew it was you. I didn't had no evidence. It says you're Pod Vader, and I don't remember calling in.
Okay. Well, I said I was going to call in the chat. And I didn't interrupt because I didn't want to make more editing work for you. Well, but I know you got a lot of stuff from James.
That's why I was in the chat. Okay. Well, do you have thoughts you want to share?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think James actually covered the recap really well. You know, in terms of the way the game went, we both thought this was going to be a close game. And with both J.J. Watt and Merciless going down on the Chiefs' first drive, I think that sort of sours things a little bit in terms of, you know, what you're looking at in terms of evaluating
Hold that thought real quick. Hold on. And not to be forgotten, I'm here with Nick, the Chiefs superfan. We tried to avoid you, tried to dodge you, but your smug just permeated the internet and you found us. So why don't you give us your thoughts? You've already heard James's thoughts on this game. Your Chiefs victorious yet again, as they have been every single week this year.
I'm like Kareem Hunt. I'm like playing parkour in the hole, man. You just can't you can't avoid me. You can't bring me down. When I call into this show, you have to just take the loss of yardage, man. I'm going in. As I mentioned, I was listening in on what James was saying there. I think he recapped the game really well. I mean, the fact is that with both with Merciless and J.J. Watt going down on the Chiefs' first drive, I mean, it was pretty clear from that point on that this was just going to be a different ball game. And we both predicted, James and I, that this was going to be a close one. And then from that point on, though, there was at least some of the teeth were missing from that fearsome Texans defense. And the Chiefs were able to get off to a good start. I mean, despite the fact that they were missing the entire interior of their offensive line, they're actually starting Cam Irving, who looked like a bust and a half for the Cleveland Browns, but the Chiefs traded for him this offseason. They actually started him at right guard. And the Chiefs, the protection held up well without those big pass rushers. And, I think the main thing, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of surprises on the Chiefs side. I mean, the big story in this game is really just the bloodbath of injuries, not only on the Texans side, but Travis Kelce went down with a concussion late in the first half. He didn't come back. It looks like they lost Chris Conley, number two receiver, to an Achilles. That could be season ending, towards the end. Do the Chiefs just keep rolling? I mean, on the Texans side, I will just say from the Chiefs' perspective, Deshaun Watson's a really interesting player. I mean, the Chiefs, I think, held him just like 50% completion rate. I mean, I think he was something for like 8 of 20 practically at some point in the game, but he still scored four touchdowns. And some of those touchdowns were the crazy, college sort of things. I mean, there was one where the Chiefs had him dead to rights. I mean, they had pass rushers all over him, hands on him. He just flinged it up into single coverage on Will Fuller, and Fuller came down with it. And it was just, some level of me as an NFL person, this feels like okay, like NFL watcher, like this is going to catch up to him at some point. But, he's obviously still a learning guy, and if he's able to pull off those unbelievable things, I mean, it was, he's going to be a very good player in this league. And as for the Chiefs, I mean, being 5-0 at this point, having faced the competition that we've faced, I mean, yeah, I guess we are the best team in the league, and that's a really weird and uncomfortable position to be in as a Chiefs fan, because generally that means the trap door is somewhere nearby. And I think maybe that trap door is just the injuries that are mounting, but the Chiefs are still able to get it done. We're now going into a home matchup against the Steelers that just had their own kind of embarrassing loss. And last year, we went into Pittsburgh after the Steelers got embarrassed by the Dolphins, and ourselves had our worst loss in several years. got ourselves embarrassed by the Steelers. So I don't know. This Chiefs season just continues to be crazy and unbelievable. This was a great game other than the injuries, and I think it's the injuries that are going to continue to define it and that are really going to be the big impact for the rest of the season.
All right, there you have it. Thank you, Nick.
Cheers.
All right, next up on the Next Fan Up podcast, it is me, yours truly, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan. I am here and going to host some of our game recaps here. And of course, I'd like to remind you that we are the only podcast out there that you can grab those for your ride to work on the East Coast. And you can look forward to that each and every Monday morning from our podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter as well, at NFU Podcast. And you can follow me at JoshDaly72. And also, we have with us Ken, our I almost said San Diego. I still can't get used to that, Ken, but our Los Angeles Chargers super fan. Ken is joining us to recap the much-needed win over the New York Giants. We saw a lot of road teams emerge victorious earlier today. And, Ken, your Chargers were one of them. What did you see in the game today?
Oh, man, it was an ugly, ugly, ugly game. It started off with a bad snap that resulted in a safety. And throughout the first half, the Chargers really couldn't move the ball very well. They did run into the half with a lead. But in the second half, there was a lot of defensive mistakes. Although they did play well, they just weren't consistent enough, and they gave up a bunch of big plays. Fortunately, though, we did come up with the victory in the end, although I'm not sure we would have if the Giants hadn't lost four wide receivers. So they were down to playing their rookie tight end as a wideout on that final drive. You know, as is always with Chargers, it was a really, really close game, but it's nice to get one, especially over Eli Manning. Because the San Diego Charger fans, or the Charger fans in general, we've never forgiven good old Eli.
Yeah, it's the battle of the traded commodities from the 04 draft, was it not?
Yep, yep. The other thing about this game is Melvin Gordon probably had one of his most productive games of his career. He looked really, really good. The blocking has been really inconsistent throughout the season, but he's been able to make a lot of things happen with not a lot of room to work with, and he was gashing the Giants throughout the second half. And then, of course, he did have two receiving touchdowns, so that was really nice to see. But the really concerning thing for me is Phillip Rivers. He has not looked great all year, and today, you know, even though he had three touchdowns, he was missing receivers a lot. And on top of that, Keenan Allen was dropping passes left and right, which is very uncharacteristic. So although we got the victory, it was really, really ugly, and I did not expect to win at the end. So we'll see. This Anthony Lynn, our head coach, I have not been impressed so far. This team just really, they don't know how to play a complete game. And although we won today, I don't know if that would have happened if we had not, you know, been fortunate enough to play the receiverless Giants on that final drive.
Yeah, I was just going to say some of those guys that that I saw them trotting out, just, you know, wasn't really sure if those were, you know, guys that were really on the team or if they just kind of pulled them out of the stands. But I know the big story out of this game, everybody's going to be talking about that nasty Odell Beckham injury. But yeah, before that, we had, you know, both Shepard and just everybody was going out with ankle injuries. And that was just ridiculous. I don't think I've ever seen a team lose three players in the same game from the same position to the same injury. And it seemed like it just kept getting worse as it kept happening to the Giants. But like you mentioned, Ken, you know, you needed that win. So it's definitely nice to see the Chargers get on the board. That snap at the beginning of the game, I kind of thought, you know, I said on the Thursday preview, probably going to be one of those where it goes, you know, very low scoring or it could be very high scoring. And I thought we might have had like a Keystone Capers football game on our hands at first, but it ended up being a pretty respectable game. I thought you definitely hit the nail on the head there. Gordon was awesome, over 160 total yards. You'll take that all the time. So definitely appreciate you going over some of the news and notes from this one here, Ken. And we appreciate you stopping by and taking a few minutes to talk about the game with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say is I believe that Melvin Ingram is on his way to a Defensive Player of the Year award. He had a strip sack that was absolutely critical in the victory. So with that, I'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, totally agree. He's been playing out of his mind all season, and we will definitely look forward to week six. Thanks again, Ken.
Absolutely.
All right, there you have it. That was Ken, our San Diego Chargers super fan, and we will keep the game recaps rolling here on the Next Fan Up podcast. All right, next fan up here on the game recaps is going to be Charlie, our San Francisco 49ers super fan. And Charlie, you guys traveled to Indianapolis to take on the Colts today. Tell me about this game. This game was, you know, just barely went over the total. I know I kind of thought it was going to be a little bit higher scoring. We kind of saw most of those points in the second half. What are the news and notes from this game?
Well, overall, the first two quarters was all field goals. You know, Indy and the Niners created field goals of 6-6 going into halftime. And then during halftime, they recognized Peyton Manning and put his, you know, his jersey in the rafters and those things and unveiled him in their Ring of Honor. And during that time, they threw, you know, like a ceremonial touchdown pass to Reggie Wayne. And at the time, I figured that might be the only touchdown they score, both teams score all game. But the Colts got the ball back right at the start of the third quarter. Were able to get punch the ball in for a touchdown. Really, both games were a story of their rookie running backs. Marlon Mack for the Colts looked just amazing, spelling Frank Gore there. And Matt Breida spelled Carlos Hyde there for a while, and he had some pretty phenomenal runs as well. But in the end, the Colts were the better team. They got ahead 14 points. The Niners came storming back in the third, or in the fourth quarter, I should say, tied it up with a George Kittle touchdown to send the game into overtime. But the Colts won the coin toss, got the ball back, drove it down, and scored. So, actually, I apologize. No, the Niners did stop them at first with a pick, but then promptly went three and out with some more offensive ineptitude. And the Colts got the ball back, and then they drove it down and got the field goal. So Niners lose their fourth game by a total of 11 points the last four games, that they're, of course, 0-5. But last four games, they've only lost by 11 points. Yeah, losses are hard to deal with, especially being a super fan. But if you would have told me at the middle of summer that the Niners would be 0-5, had lost a game by a field goal in Seattle, and had lost three divisional games by less than a field goal or less, I would take that. And now we're 0-5. We're going to get a great pick. Yeah, the schedule gets a little easier, but the Niners don't have a lot of wins in the first quarter of the season, so this is going to help us get a good pick. And all in all, in the long run, that's what this team needs. They need a quarterback, because Brian Hoyer, he's a hot pile of garbage. He's horrible.
Yeah, I know. He was kind of forced to throw there in the second half, and it seemed like he was doing okay. I know I saw a few passes, though, where he just – underthrew quite a few guys. I saw him underthrow Kittle, the tight end, once, and I also saw him underthrow Breida once out of the backfield. Kind of a nice surprise, I thought, for you guys in this game was Marquise Goodwin coming in questionable with a concussion. Saw that he actually put up a decent game, 5 for 116, and no, it looks like he got most of that on a chunk play, about a 51-yard completion. Any other surprises or any injuries of note from this game?
Well, Pierre Garçon looked really well against the team that drafted him in the Colts. First drive, he had 4 catches, finished only with 8, but at 94 yards. Besides Marquise, he was the guy that was constantly, that third down guy that was getting the catches to extend the drive, although the Niners were pretty inept on third down. But if they were converting, it was Pierre Garçon. So that was good to see. I should say the Niners secondary, at one point, they had to take their free safety, their starting free safety, and bring him down that corner, because they had three different corners go out during this game. And that was that third quarter drive that the Colts went down and scored right after halftime. So they definitely exploited that. But the second-year player, Rashard Robinson, came back to finish the game and nearly sealed it with a pick there on that first overtime, on that overtime drive, but couldn't quite get it, and the Colts were the better team.
Well, there you have it. Definitely another hard-fought overtime loss for the San Francisco 49ers. And Charlie, we appreciate you taking time out to discuss kind of the game recap with us. And we appreciate your time, sir.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Take care. All right. And moving along on the next Fan Up podcast, it is Ben, our Cleveland Browns super fan. And Ben, you are going to be walking us through the Jets coming into Cleveland today and just beating the Browns here by a field goal. One of these teams, definitely, you know, both of them at the beginning of the year, we were kind of having these thoughts that, the Browns and Jets are tanking. And you kept hearing the 0-16 talk. Well, we knew that was impossible because week five brought the matchup of both of these two teams. The Browns, however, are still looking fantastic to get the number one pick. But why don't you walk us through the game here today and tell us what you saw, Ben?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting game. First off, we got to talk about my boy Myles Garrett. First snap of his pro career, and he gets just a gift of a sack, which was awesome. It was a lot of fun to kind of watch him just abuse their offensive line, and it was nice to see some early returns on a player since he hasn't been able to play the first 4 weeks. So that was nice. Then on top of that, I mean, we finally got some running game going. It seemed like Hugh Jackson remembered for the first time that, you can call running plays. And so it was kind of nice to see us just ground and pound. I think Crowell was averaging over 5 yards a carry. I think probably the story of this game is turnovers and the quarterback change going on the Browns. We turned the ball over twice in the red zone, once on the 2 yard line and once on like the 3 yard line, which is just, it's really hard to win football games like that. And then at half, Hugh decided to sit Deshaun Kizer and go with Stanford's own Kevin Hogan. And like the difference in the passing game was night and day. Like Kizer's out there, just looking like the game's too big for him. He's slow. He's staring down receivers. He's inaccurate, taking forever to get the ball out. And you get Kevin and Hogan in there, and it's like he upgraded, upgraded the processing speed, and it's just the ball's out of his hands a lot faster. He's getting to the wide receiver, making the right reads, and he's actually sneaky athletic. He had a couple of nice rushes in there as well. And then on top of that, I know that I'm talking a lot about the Browns here, so I apologize for the Jets fans. But on top of this, the other kind of story of the game and kind of how we lost is I turning the ball over in the red zone. We also missed two gimme field goals. And so one of which I think was like a 27 yarder. And so then leads to And so then after our kickers missed a bunch of kicks, Hugh Jackson's looking at fourth and one on the on the 3 yard line, decides to run it with Crowell to try to get the first down or a touchdown. And the formation that he chose to run it was just weird. No fullback, no pulling tight end, just had all wide, just bunched wide receivers and then the straight offensive line. It's a play I've never really seen him call before. And it was just weird and not one that I liked. I know we kind of talked about this last week, but I think his seat's getting pretty hot. He's 1-20 now in his first two seasons, so it's not looking too good for you.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Definitely saw kind of the offense awake and some sort of a revival there in the second half. Hogan only attempted two more passes than Kizer in the game, but more than doubled him up on yardage. Kizer going 8-for-17 for 87. Hogan going 16-for-19 for 194 and two touchdowns. One quick question that I had
on a pretty good Jets defense.
Yeah, not too bad. One quick question I had for you, Ben, was what do you think as far as Hogan, if they move forward the rest of the season, what do you think that means for Isaiah Crowell? It almost seems like once Hogan got in there that he kind of, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like the ball was definitely being ran more effectively once he was in the game.
Well, yeah, this is the first time all season the Browns had more than 20 rushing attempts, which is, something everybody has been screaming for because it's so obvious. In terms of Crowell, you know, I think Kaiser made – or Hugh Jackson made the change to Hogan. I would anticipate Hogan being the guy going forward. In terms of Crowell, like, he did a pretty good job today. But, I mean, it's the offense is adds another threat with Duke Johnson. I think a lot of us would like to see him get the nod over over Crowell. So, but, I mean, it just really just depends on Hugh Jackson. You know, we have a good offensive line. We have two solid running backs. It's up to him to use them or not. And, you know, going back to last season, I mean, I can only count on one or two games where he's, you know, started with the run and stuck with it. And so that's the part that's so frustrating, even when it's working well.
Well, we can definitely understand that. I know we thought several times in that first half the Browns were going to end up with their first lead of the season, and it is hard to run the ball when you don't have the lead, that is for sure. But definitely appreciate you taking the time to recap the game for us, Ben. And the Browns still on track, and I agree, it's nice to see Myles Jarrett get in there and getting things done. So very exciting kind of wrinkle to the game, and looking forward to week six for sure.
Yep.
Thanks again, Ben.
Yep, thanks. Have a good one.
Welcome, superfans, to week five of the NFL, where we saw four teams on bye this week. The Falcons, Broncos, Saints, and Redskins out of action. But we had eight early games this morning, and we're going to start off with James, the superfan for the Philadelphia Eagles, who had the Arizona Cardinals come to town for what appeared to be a whooping. James, how you doing today?
I'm doing great after this win, wire to wire. Fourth quarter held on, didn't allow a late charge comeback. There was a touchdown at the end that was called off because of the fumble through the end zone. Time of possession still leading the league, and a good solid win from beginning to end. Just getting ready for Thursday now. A couple of players were out. Hopefully they come back. If not, we'll have Monday night against Washington in 2 weeks.
Carson Wentz had a hell of a day, 21 for 30, 300 yards, and four touchdown passes. What were some of the highlights that you thought led to the Philadelphia Eagles just dominating this game from beginning to end?
Offensive line play to start. They gave Wentz time in the pocket. One of the touchdowns, the third one, I believe, to Nelson Aguilar was a busted play. That was the fourth touchdown, was a blitz up the middle. Caught Aguilar on the safety one-on-one. Pretty much juked him out of his shoes, fell into the end zone. Pressure by the defense early on kind of set up some short fields, and I can't give enough credit to Kenyon Barner, who we re-signed after Darren Sproles went down, returning punts of 19, 70, and 50 yards to set up basically the first three touchdowns, and giving us a short field early to jump out 21-0 in the first quarter. The tight ends got involved early, worked in Smith and Alshon Jeffrey later on, sprinkled in some dump downs to some of the backs, and got LeGarrette Blount going in the second half. And very close to getting him to 100 yards, but they stuck with the run, which kept the Arizona offense off the field. For me, the big key in this game was third down conversion. 9-14 for Philadelphia. At one point, it was 7-9 because, like, they couldn't even miss on third down. And 4-14 for Arizona because they really couldn't convert anything till late. But the offensive line for Arizona is pretty much going to be a challenge for them for the rest of the season. They had re-signed a guard who was starting today off the street. They just signed him Thursday, and he looked to have all types of fits up the middle. Constant pressure on Carson Palmer, some errant throws, some bad throws. Finally got a pick on him late, but hits early and often wore him down, and that offense running game needs to be found because it doesn't exist right now.
Yeah, Carson Palmer, even with all of the defense going on, still threw 44 pass attempts, completed 28, and still just got shy of 300 yards and a touchdown. So not a terrible day for Carson Palmer on paper, but if you saw the game, the Philly defense was all over those guys.
Very, very much so. Tight coverage, on the wide receivers. Brown got deep a couple of times, but they couldn't connect. Patrick Robinson. It's like a resurgence for him. He was basically involved in all the deep throws to Brown and could have came down with three interceptions on all of these passes. The ball hit him right in the hands, but, you know, he turned the wide receiver into a defensive back because he always had better position on Brown in every single deep play. And, you know, Palmer's the type of guy who's going to throw it up there and give his receiver a chance, but Patrick just has a height advantage over Brown. Brown, I believe, is like 5'8", and Patrick Robinson's about 6'1", 6'2", maybe. So he definitely had the height advantage. He got up, got his hands on a couple of balls, could have easily brought him in. One, he almost tipped to Corey Graham, who actually played today, which is pleasant to have him back. But he dove late, couldn't get there in time for that possible interception. But, yeah, just Palmer had his opportunities late in the game when we were in, you know, soft coverage prevent mode. They let him march down the field, kill the clock in that final minute. But first 3.5 quarters, he was completely out of sorts.
Well, I love seeing J.J. Nelson get some more action. He's going to be overshadowed a little bit by the return of John Brown, but he's had a couple of really awesome weeks as John Brown was hurt. So it was still good to see him get some action here, even in defeat. The Eagles top Arizona 34-7. James, any closing thoughts you want to leave us with here?
Time of possession seems to be our key to winning games this season. We are leading the league in that category due to maintaining constant staying with the run constantly. So as long as we keep that up, we'll always have a chance to win a game. This one, the defense just showed out from beginning to end. Didn't allow them to get back into it like the previous 2 weeks against the Chargers and the Giants. So short week. Hopefully no glaring injuries. Hopefully we get a couple of guys who didn't play today back Thursday in Carolina, because, man, the Panthers, they're starting to come around, and I hate when we get these teams who start off slow and start to come around as they're about to play us. So this Thursday night game is going to be very interesting.
Yes, it is, and you and I will be having a very in-depth conversation later this week. Let's talk about the NFC as a whole. You guys are really – the NFC is really starting to take shape. Especially in the NFC East, really going to see the Eagles dominate from the way things look as of today, as of week five. But I think the NFC as a whole is really starting to take shape. And we have Green Bay and Dallas playing in an afternoon game today that'll really have some outcomes on that. What's your take on the NFC kind of quarter way through the season here? And where do you see the Eagles landing if we speculate towards the end of the season?
The NFC as a whole right now is in flux. I can't say there's a team asserting its dominance right now, because all the, you know, traditional powers that we've seen over the last 3 to 5 years are struggling one way or another. The Seahawks, the Packers, even upstarts we thought were going to make noise this year. The Lions, who faltered today. The Falcons, even their loss last week, even when they're winning, kind of look out of sorts on one side of the ball or the other. They're kind of nicked up right now. The Panthers look like, again, they're coming into form right now, but people were still kind of iffy in the beginning of the season whether they were going to be the same team from 2 years ago or last year. That was in question. The Cardinals, who people expected to get back to form, just have no offensive line. So I can't say there's one clear dominant team that's going to take over at this point. Probably around Thanksgiving, things will start to round themselves into shape and we'll have a better idea. I do like what my team is doing. I'm not trying to get overzealous or over-anxious about our potential postseason possibilities, but the way our division is shaping up, with everyone else being 2-2 aside from the winless Giants, it's a good chance that we should make the playoffs, if not have a shot at winning the division. But we still have 2 games against Dallas to play before the season's over with, and we finish up with Washington in 2 weeks. We'll be done with that matchup, and I have no idea what the Giants are going to look like when we play them again, considering all their troubles. So I'm not going to say it's anybody's game, but the way things are looking right now, we can count the Giants out, but Cowboys and Washington definitely are going to give us fits towards the end of the year.
And, of course, Thursday night football this week, you face the Panthers. So that's going to be a very interesting – I think two of the bigger heavyweights in the NFC currently are the Panthers and the Eagles. So I think that will be an interesting showdown of sorts there in the NFC. Well, James, thank you for joining us. Looking forward to the game on Thursday night, and you and I will definitely talk in detail next week.
Yes, we will.
All right, now we're going to talk to Rob, our Buffalo Bills super fan, as they headed down to the AFC North to face the Cincinnati Bengals. Rob, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing all right. Could be better. Would have been better if the Bills snuck out the victory, but, you know, it's football. What are you going to do?
True, and it looked like you had it there for a while, but Cincinnati somehow snuck 10 points in there at the fourth quarter. How'd the game go for you?
I mean, for me, it was a little bit of what I expected. The Cincinnati Bengals came out well, and they've tended to do that the past couple weeks under their new offensive coordinator. They start out a little hot, The Bills kind of weathered that storm, although they were down after the first quarter. Cincinnati did have a very long touchdown pass to A.J. Green for 77 yards. Second half, the Bills were still able to do a little bit, even with their depleted weapons. I mean, right now they're missing their number one receiver. They're also, you know, their tight end, their number one tight end is probably their number one target. Charles Clay got injured during the game. Be interesting to see what comes of that. But the Bills were able to tie it at halftime. You know, getting into the second half, I felt pretty confident because Andy Dalton started to, you know, things started to kind of go the Bills' way. Threw a pass to A.J. Green for big yardage. However, he fumbled the ball on a hit, and Jordan Poyer picked it up, took it down a little bit. Bills ended up leading at the end of three quarters. They were up 13-10, but the Bengals just kind of, you know, came away with it. And at the end of the day, the Bills have done well so far this year, I think, on a big part of the X's and O's. I think Sean McDermott's done a really good job with that, as well as his offensive and defensive coordinators. But sometimes the game just comes down to the Janes and the Joes. And the Bengals just had better personnel at this point, and they were able to pull away once the Bills, you know, dealing with a lot of injuries on the offensive side of the ball, just weren't able to really recover and move the ball, in the second half.
Well, what's your take on the Buffalo offense currently as far as Tyrod Taylor? 20 for 37, only 166 yards. We saw here. LeSean McCoy is actually, Shady McCoy got almost 20, a full workload of 20 carries, 63 yards, but only a 3 yard per carry average. That seems low for 19 rushing attempts. What's going on? Is it the offensive line that's breaking down for Buffalo that's really not allowing them to succeed?
No, it's you know what? It's tough. They don't have a number one receiver right now, and it's hurting them. I mean, you look at the receivers that are getting the most targets on the team. They're throwing to their running back. LeSean McCoy had 9 targets. Nick O'Leary, who's the backup tight end, had 6 targets. As far as wide receiver targets, I am looking at the stat sheet right now. They had 12 targets the whole game, to their wide receivers, because their wide receiver depth just isn't there. Zay Jones, he's a rookie second-round pick. He might become a nice player, but he's not a number one guy. And that just trickles down from there. I mean, you're throwing passes to Andre Holmes, who was like the 5th receiver in Oakland 2 years ago. Kalen Clay, who you're probably familiar with, he's not anything special. He's a player, but once the Bills are like built, he's not going to be on this team. I mean, you're throwing 4 targets to Brandon Tate, who really is nothing more than a punt returner. So I think, when you look at their offense, I think they're just hurting from a talent perspective. I mean, LeSean McCoy's great, but what are you going to do if you don't have any receivers, no one to stretch? You're going to have teams just kind of lining up to take him out, and it's really showing in his workload. I mean, he had 3 yards or so per carry today, and that's kind of been the story, so far this year, is that he's had, other than the Jets game, he's had trouble getting going. I mean, against your team, the Carolina Panthers, he did basically nothing. Against Denver in the next game, he did just a touch more than nothing. And then against Atlanta, he did a little bit more than that. I think it just comes down to there's not the weapons. And since it's a new offense, no one is super confident in what they're doing. Tyrod Taylor has looked good, but he looked good with no one injured, But now that, Jordan Matthews is out, you get Charles Clay injured, and bad things are going to happen.
Yeah. Those two big offensive weapons especially, I think, are kind of the Achilles heel of the Buffalo offense right now. Even with a rushing backfield like Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy, it's hard to not be excited to watch what that offense could potentially do. But I hear you, man. It's tough when you really don't have that kind of talent to throw to. There's really no outs, and you have to depend solely on that rushing game, and defenses will capitalize on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously the Bills are in work in progress. it's been great. You know, this beginning run, you know, you start off 3-1 and winning two big games, you know, against Denver and then winning a game in Atlanta. Not an easy feat, you know, so it's fun. It's exciting for the future because I feel that Sean McDermott and his staff are getting the most out of the team. Just that being said, you know, there's only so much you can get out of them, you know. And, you know, when you're bringing inferior talent to the table against other teams, you know, usually you lose. So it's, you know, kind of a tough deal. I still see the Bills as maybe, you know, an 8-win team, 7-8 win team. They've already been through their hardest part of the schedule, you know, but, you know, let's see how the injuries go. And as a Bills fan, just honestly looking forward to what this season brings and knowing that the Bills have a, 6 of the first 96 picks in the draft next year.
That's not a bad thing to have. Well, let's hit on the AFC East real quick, because there's an interesting thing happening where, aside from the Dolphins, who had their bye week already and are at 2-2, the entire AFC East is tied at 3-2 right now. What's your take on where we go from here 5 weeks into the season, as we go, you know, the next month of 6 weeks of games moving towards Thanksgiving and beyond? What's your take on the AFC East as a whole?
I think the AFC East is honestly, it's an intriguing division because the Jets seem to be overperforming for what was expected of them. I think it's fair to say the Bills are overperforming for what's expected of them. And at least for the first 5 weeks, the New England Patriots, who have been the standard bearer in that division for at least a decade, are way underperforming. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the Thursday night game, but they're one Tampa Bay kicker away from being 2-3.
Yeah.
They haven't looked great. And a lot of their games have been, you know, close. And, you know, it should be a concern. That being said, I think they do ultimately win the division. You know, I mean, they still have talent. Brady, even though he's 40, is still Brady. They still have who I think is one of the best coaches ever. Just that being said, it's become a little interesting because the Bills and the Jets have kind of overperformed and played, you know, well. And the Dolphins, I feel like talent-wise, they've underperformed. But yet, here they are sitting at 2-2, and they're, you know, a half game out of the lead. And, you know, last year they played really well when they were all healthy. So, you know, who knows? Let's kind of see where the chips fall over the next 6-8 weeks and kind of take it from there.
Well, as you mentioned, the Jets are overperforming. With their win to against Cleveland today, they have now won their last three games after starting 0-2. So you're right, they're on a tear. Now, I want to temper that a little bit with their opponents, but at the same time, they're on a winning streak of three straight games, three straight weeks in a row of wins. Would it surprise you to see the Jets at the top of the AFC East this year?
Yes. Yes. I like it because I guess it means they're really not big fans of Sam Darnold. But I, it would be a surprise. Offensively, their weapons are just, I mean, apparently Jermaine Kearse is maybe better than I thought he was. But other than, you know, and maybe, you know, Bilal Powell plays like he did the last couple games of last year. But other than that, I don't see a way that it continues. But you know what? Good for them.
Yeah, they've only scored 92 points, and they've only allowed 106 points to be scored against them, where if you look at somebody like the Patriots, they've scored 148 points as opposed to 92, but they've allowed 142 points to be scored on them. I don't know what's going on with the Patriots defense. We'll have to talk to Pod Vader about this game they had against Tampa Bay that they barely scratched by after losing to the Panthers last week. But the AFC East is one of the more interesting divisions to watch, for me at least, this year in the NFL. So, well, Rob, thank you very much for the recap, and we'll tune in next week.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right, and this is Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan. I am up to host the next Fan Up game recap. And this will be the game featuring the Green Bay Packers, who traveled to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. And I have with us Brian, our Packers super fan, and Kevin,
hey,
our Cowboys super fan. We'll go ahead and get the game started here. And we'll kick it to you, Brian. Go ahead. We saw the Packers win a very close game here here in the last seconds. Go ahead and give us your game recap, sir.
Ooh, baby, man, what a game. Instant classic. Rodgers played lights out. I think especially when you take into account the shape of our O-line, pretty rough there the first quarter, but got things turned around and really started to move the ball. I think, except for one drive, I think we pretty much did what we wanted to do on offense, which included a heck of a good rushing attack this week. Aaron Jones looks like a guy who can play running back in the NFL, and he put together a game here today that I think he's probably earned himself some more playing time, even when Montgomery comes back. So like, he played great. Devontae Adams I wanted to highlight as well. Just obviously everybody saw the big hit that he took last week, and there was some question about whether or not he'd be able to go this week. Well, lo and behold, he went, and he went off. A couple of touchdowns, kept the chains moving for us, and really that last drive, they showed Jordy Nelson on the sidelines, and I think pretty much everybody in Packer Nation expected that Devontae Adams was going to be the go-to guy in the end zone, and we took a couple of chances at it, and he caught the second one to ice the game for us. So, awesome win. Man, it seems like every time we play the Cowboys, it's a heck of a game. And, I think they're a great team, and I expect we'll probably both be playoff teams. And luckily, if it comes down to it, hopefully this game can give us the leg up, and we'll end up playing at Lambeau instead of in Dallas.
Yeah, definitely a big surprise there with Devontae Adams being such a huge part in this game. And we'll swing it to you here, Kevin, to kind of get your side of it and see kind of what you thought here of the Cowboys. Very back and forth affair. And what are your notes from the game?
excuse me. It was a very exciting game. Can't deny that. I mean, it was engaging from the opening kick. I mean, I thought the Cowboys caught a huge break in the beginning with that ball Dez dropped in the end zone, and they called that bogus, whatever they called, excessive force on, I forget who, but that the play in the end zone that gave the Cowboys an automatic first down. That was really bogus. so that helped out the Cowboys a lot. But then going on, just some more referee talk, that play where Rodgers was sacked by David Irving, and they called a personal foul call on Benson Mayowa. Also a really bad call, but I guess it was a makeup call. So I just wanted to point those out to everyone. They do end up evening out, but I thought the refs sort of had a pretty hard day in this one. But going to the game, I thought the Packers did a really good job stopping Zeke, especially in the first half. The Cowboys tried to establish Zeke really, really, I mean, that's all they wanted to do in the fourth quarter. I think they gave it to him like 6-7 times on the opening drive, and he was having no success running the ball. Opening play of the game was a loss of 4 to Zeke on a little pass out to the flat. So the Packers were definitely ready for it, for Zeke and the offensive line. But come the fourth quarter, I guess the Packers were a little worn out defensively. Zeke was really got all his yards in the fourth quarter. He ended up going over 100. I think 90 of them came in the fourth quarter. So, in theory, what the Cowboys wanted to do worked on the offensive side, wore out the defense. I think they ended up winning the time of possession battle really pretty handily after that last drive that lasted 9 minutes for the Cowboys, from that left the Packers 1 minute to score. So, offensively, I don't really have much to criticize for the Cowboys. By far, their best offensive performance of the season. Jason Witten was involved. Des Bryant had a few nice plays, another touchdown for him. Cole Beasley, finally aside from him, 2 touchdowns. So the offense really, I mean, super pleased about the offense. I know the Packers, I know Kevin King left also in the beginning of the game, but play with the cards you're dealt, and really have no criticism for the for the Cowboys offense, besides that one Terrence Williams drop that led to an interception. But yeah. Now, on the defensive side, oh my, so much went wrong. Couldn't stop the run. I said in the preview, if we couldn't stop the run, we would have no chance at winning this game. And besides one draw that Brian pointed out, the Packers did whatever they wanted on offense. Little to no pressure on Rodgers. We got to him two or three times in the first quarter, I think. But after that, nothing. So, I mean, Martellus Bennett had a nice grab at one point. I thought he would have been a bigger factor, so it was good to see that. Rodgers did a good job spreading it out between Adams and Cobb. Jordy had three catches. He looked hurt. He was out on the sideline on the last drive, as Brian said. Of course, I picked Jordy Nelson in DraftKings, and he has the worst receiving game out of all the receivers. He did score a touchdown, but just bad luck again there for me. But I just knew the Cowboys were going to relinquish the lead to Rodgers in the last drive. Who didn't know it was going to happen? It happens every time. It's happened three times to the Cowboys now. And Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan, I have no clue what they're thinking, calling a fade to Dez on first and goal or wherever it was, stop the clock. Our whole point of that drive was to waste the clock to give Rodgers no time, and now we stop the clock at a minute. That's giving – if we ran the ball there and then we score on the next play with that Dak option play, they have 35 seconds, 40 seconds instead of over a minute. It's a really boneheaded call there. Like, if we did score there, granted it's a touchdown, great to score, but he now has a minute and 30 seconds instead of a minute 20 seconds. So I don't know what the Cowboys really were trying to accomplish there. Didn't make a lot of sense to me. But yeah, at the end of the day, Rodgers, once again, right down the field, no resistance, scores with under 10 seconds left, and there you have it. Cowboys fall to 2-3.
Yeah, unfortunately, as a Lions fan, my friend, definitely all too familiar with Aaron Rodgers snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. And also, you mentioned DraftKings. Yeah, the DFS Twitter world was ablaze with the troll Beasley talk. So I think most people were on Dez today, but it is what it is. You know, live and learn. But definitely appreciate both of you fellas stopping out. It seems like every time the Packers and Cowboys get together, it's always an instant classic, it seems like. So definitely enjoyed
Josh,
this
sorry game. Can I say one last thing that I know will upset Cowboys fans real quick? Jalen Smith needs to be benched. He needs to be benched. He's just not playing well. I know he's a fan favorite, great story that he's even out on the field, but he is just, he's not good right now. He got completely obliterated on one of the first touchdowns for the Packers. He's just out of place, all over the place, on run and pass coverage. He needs, when Sean Lee comes back, it's got to be Hitchens and Lee. Got to be Hitchens and Lee. Jalen Smith is just, in my opinion, losing more playing time every time he steps out on the field. Not ready yet.
Yeah, sounds like somewhat of a liability. Well, you'll definitely be looking forward to that. I know my team's got some changes that sound like they're going to be coming as well. So we'll definitely look forward to that here in week 6. And fellas, thanks again for stopping in, and we appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday football.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
All right, and this is Robert, the Buffalo Bills super fan, and we're here to talk about some NFC football. The Carolina Panthers went into Detroit, got the win, 27-24. Here to talk about the game is the Panthers super fan, Nick. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great, Rob.
Awesome, awesome. So just going to give you the floor. Tell me about the game. Got a nice big win on the road in conference, which is always good.
Yes, we did. First of all, I want to say there was a lot of people kind of LOLing at my prediction earlier in the week when I said the Panthers would win 24-9, because I think the Lions have shown us everything that they're going to show us. And there was a point in this game where it was 27-10 late in the third quarter, and we were getting into the fourth quarter, and the Lions decided to come out of the locker room, which is always a good thing, as they are known to do. Late in the fourth quarter and make these runs. And they did today with two passes from Matt Stafford to Fells, their tight end, back-to-back touchdowns like that. And they made it close. They brought it to 27-24, and there were some people sweating, but luckily we hit the two-minute warning and everything kind of ran out. I think if there was another minute or two on the clock, I think I'd have been sweating a little bit more. That said, fantastic outing after all of the controversy that happened this past week surrounding Cam Newton and his mouth. The he came out and just owned it today. 26 for 33, 355 yards and 3 touchdowns. We saw Ed Dixon have an absolutely monstrous day with 2 receptions over 50 yards. He had 5 catches for 175 yards with a 35-yard average reception. Kelvin Benjamin got involved in the game finally. Like, we're finally getting that guy into a rhythm. 4 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown got him on the board. And, of course, last but certainly not least, Christian McCaffrey got his first NFL touchdown with a shovel pass option to rush it into the end zone. I'm anxious to see him get some more action, Christian McCaffrey, as he gets into more into rhythm this season. But I love that they are slow playing him and not showing all the cards right up front. I constantly get asked about CMC and what I think about him, and I think they're doing the right thing by not overutilizing him, potentially leading to an injury or something like that. We see that way too often in the NFL. You've got a shiny new toy, and you want to throw it out there at every single snap. I'm glad they're really slow rolling this kid because he is a monster. He had some behind-his-back one-armed catch that he just flexed into his bicep, which was unbelievable. That'll definitely be on the top 10 highlights this week. But, you know, monstrous win over a team, in my opinion, that has shown us all of their cards. We've seen everything the Lions are going to do at this point. Yes, they made a staunch comeback. Yes, they are a dangerous last-minute team. But I still believe that they're going to be that mid-card NFC 9-7 team as we get to the end of the season. It's exciting to see the Panthers really starting to make a push. Things are starting to gel together after a disastrous 2016 season and, frankly, a slow start to the 2017 season. So taking down the team that has, frankly, made it into almost everybody's top 10 list on the power rankings in the Detroit Lions is a bit of a big statement.
Agreed. Nice win. The last thing I got for you, Nick, you know, but maybe some of our listeners don't know, is that you take a lot of crap from some of the other super fans regarding Cam Newton. And I'm not talking about this week. I'm talking about just in general. A lot of them say he's a bad quarterback. I am personally of the belief that he's not a bad quarterback, but he obviously played a great game. I'd like to just give you the floor to just crow, specifically to people like Kevin, the Cowboy super fan who always runs dirt on him.
Look, every week you're going to have the quarterbacks that show up and throw 50 pass attempts. Carson Palmer, who we just talked to with James, threw 44 this week. But it takes them 50 pass attempts to get to something like a 355 yards kind of number, or, you know, 300 to 400 yards. Cam did it in 26 completions this week. That's with 3 touchdowns. That's an incredible stat line to have. It's an incredible passer rating. I believe it puts him in the mid-120s, if my quick off-the-cuff math is working right. So, incredible day from Cam Newton, and we didn't see him rushing that much. There were a couple of blown coverages or blown plays that where we saw him scramble and try and just tuck it and run, but it didn't look like there were a lot of designed run plays. So, this offense and Cam Newton is really starting to come together. And I believe that there's something happening overall from what I'll say is the coaching staff, not naming any particular names, of who calls what plays and how they want Cam to be this kind of archetypal pocket passer. And he's not going to be. He's never going to be. He's a 6'5", 260-pound, 245, I should say now, just big man. And he can run as fast as some of the top receivers in the league. So you absolutely need to take advantage of that. And the fact that they tried to hold him in the pocket for so long last season is one of the things that, A, made the Panthers fall as drastically as they did, and, B, is one of the things that got him hurt continuously because he needs to move, he needs to run, all that stuff. As far as what was said this week, nothing more needs to be said about it. We're all fans. We're all couch smarks. We will sit here and interpret and make all this, oh, he's terrible, he's a sexist, he's a woman hater. You know what? I don't agree with any of that, and I'm not even going to say what I thought here. I shared it with the super fans privately, but it's one of those things where he had a great apology, he owned it, and he came out and he just dominated today on the football field against one of the top teams in the NFC. So that's really all I've got to say about Cam Newton. Mic drop.
There you go. I like it. I'm a Cam fan, so that was more indulging me than anything else. Because he gets
thank you for giving me the
crap.
Opportunity to
he gets
do
some
so
crap in our Slack group, but I don't think it's all necessarily deserved.
No, it's not.
I would love to see him with a different offensive coordinator, my opinion. All right. But thank you for calling, Nick, and we'll chat with you later.
Thank you, Rob. Have a good day. All right, now we're heading down to Miami as the Tennessee Titans come into town to play against the Miami Dolphins. We've got our Dolphins superfan Andy with us. Andy, what'd you think of this game?
I mean, pretty ugly game to watch, regardless of whether you're a Dolphins, you know, or a Titans fan. The good news is we actually managed to outgain them. We rolled up a whopping total of 188 yards of offense to their 178, so that's the good news. More good news, our run defense against two very powerful backs and really a world-class, let's be honest, offensive line. Our run defense continues to excel. Our pass rush really did show up. Maybe that's because we were facing Matt Castle. But, you know, Matt Castle gets rid of the ball well. You know, he, for all his flaws, taking sacks typically isn't one of them. And we sacked him six times. Sue had a huge game. Charles Harris, our first-round pick, had a huge game, had a huge, crucial sack, third-down sack, in the fourth quarter. But going back to the offense, I will go on record saying that right now I think is still maybe 1 or 2 weeks too early to bench Jay Cutler, but we are getting there. We are certainly getting there. You know, next week we go into Atlanta. I don't expect to win that game. We're going to be 2-3. And then we're going to be back home playing the Jets. And I do expect to win that game. So I think in a couple of weeks, this team's going to be 3-3 and really not know who they are. I think we're going to be 3-3 and kind of be a lucky 3-3. But that's in a couple of weeks. We're 2-2 right now. But this game was very ugly. The defense could be top 10. I think if you want to come out saying something positive about the team, it's that the Dolphins defense could definitely be a top 10 unit when the season's over.
Well, let's also temper that a little bit with the Tennessee Titans and their struggles. Marcus Mariota is obviously out, Matt Castle in. They're having some difficulties gelling. So at the same time, I give them a little bit of a pass on this game. I kind of expect more with the weapons that you guys have, the defensive capability you have. Jay Cutler's obviously a wild card. You never know what the hell's going to happen with that guy week to week. But yeah, you guys pulled off the victory today. I was very impressed at the end of the first quarter going up 10-0. I was like, well, okay, Cutler may be the real deal, and they're going to blow the Titans out of the water. But yeah, it kind of died after that.
Well, remember, the only reason we went up 10-0 is because we strip-sacked Matt Castle on a great linebacker blitz by Kiko Alonso, who I'd love to see. So Kiko Alonso is actually the number 2 rated middle linebacker per Pro Football Focus going into this game. He had an absolutely incredibly disruptive game. I'm curious to see where he's going to rank come Tuesday morning. But, I mean, yeah, we were just very disruptive as a unit. That 10-point lead had nothing to do with Cutler, literally nothing. It was just a defensive touchdown. Here's what I will say about Cutler, though. There was, I think, when we had there was our second-to-last meaningful drive, which started – I believe with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, we ended up punting, but it was a 3-and-out with 3 passes. And the 3 passes were 3 pretty well-placed drops. And those 3 drops were at least 37, 38 yards worth of offense. One of them was to Stills. One of them was to Marquise Gray on a very nicely designed rollout. And the other one was to Landry, who eventually caught the touchdown. So, you know, it's not all Cutler. He's getting help. He has no protection. People are dropping passes. It's just ugly in general, and I'm not sure how it gets better. I certainly don't expect it to get better in Atlanta in their new stadium next week. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I had a great conversation with Rob, our Buffalo Bills super fan, just a little bit ago about the AFC.
I called that by the way. I was one of the few people in our little organization here that actually said that the Bengals would win, defend their home field. So just wanted to point that out. But anyway, go on.
No, I was talking specifically about the AFC East with the Dolphins, Bills, Patriots, and Jets. And I was talking about how everybody, you know, if you put aside the Dolphins have had your bye week already, so you're 2-2. Everybody else in the division after today's games is 3-2. After this week's games is 3-2. That division to me is one of the most interesting ones in the NFL right now because the Jets have won 3 straight games. Even as they're the Jets, but they've won 3 straight games. What does that do for the AFC East with everybody being tied? Where do you see this division shaking out, say, around midseason Thanksgiving timeframe?
The division looks interesting. At around Thanksgiving, I see the Patriots being either 8-3 or 7-4. They could be 7-4, definitely by then. I see us being 4-7 or 5-6. I see the Bills being 4-7 or 5-6. I see the Jets being 4-7 or 5-6. I think the division looks a little more interesting than it truly is right now, only because there's been only 5 games. And the NFL is a high-variance league to begin with, and a 16-game sample size. When you shrink the sample size from 16 to 5, it's even more high-variance. So I think that's kind of what you're seeing a little bit right now. I do think the Patriots pull away. The only difference is the Patriots this year have like an 11-5 type team instead of like a 13-3, 14-2 type team. But I don't
potentially a 10-6.
Well, the point is, and you look at Buffalo, right? Everyone's like sipping the blue and red Kool-Aid after their riveting win in Atlanta last week. They go into Cincinnati. Listen, Cincinnati's a talented, capable team with an adult quarterback. They can win any game, but they go into Cincinnati and lose. They lose Tyrod Taylor. They lose Charles Clay. Charles Clay is going to be out for a while. Tyrod Taylor, I don't know. But, you know, Buffalo could nosedive. And the Jets, listen, the Jets aren't talented. I was actually watching the Browns game out of the corner of my eye. Neither team really wanted to win that game. and just really quickly on the Browns, Hugh Jackson has been given this path in a way that you typically never see with NFL coaches. Like the Philadelphia 76ers coach during like the tank, Brown, I forget his name, but Brett Brown is his name. Normally you don't see NFL coaches given this much leash in a tank. I don't think Hugh Jackson is a good football coach at all. I know they're not trying to win games, but there is nothing. I mean, whether it's been his in-game decisions or waffling back and forth, Deshaun Kizer, Chris Hogan, enough. I don't think he's a good NFL head coach. And the Browns, they have tons of picks, but I think, I don't know if they have it settled at the top.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Andy. Thanks for calling in. Any final thoughts you want to leave here with regards to the Dolphins?
Yeah, we're going to go into Atlanta and we're not going to be terribly competitive. I think the defense will hold Matt Ryan in check. I think we're going to turn him over at least once. Give me Falcons 27, Dolphins 13.
You heard it here first, folks. All right, thank you, Andy. Have a great weekend.
Later.
All right, and up next, it is Justin, our Seahawks super fan. Justin, thank you for taking some time to go through the game recap here for the Seahawks and Rams game. Hard fought, low scoring game, only 26 points scored in this one, and not a whole lot of points being scored after the half. Why don't you take us through this game and tell us what you saw from the Seahawks perspective?
Yeah, it's funny. You say this is not a high scoring game. If you watch the way that these two teams have played each other, even with the Rams being especially bad during the Jeff Fisher years, this is a shootout by the standards of these two teams when they face one another, especially when they're on the road. I'll be completely honest. I am very, very pleased that the Seahawks won. I would not have been surprised at all if they lost. They were 5-5 against the Rams going into this. And the way the game started out, it looked like that was going to continue. I mean, Jared Goff came out. They moved right down the field. I mean, marched right down the throat of the Seahawks defense, which is something that I'm going to touch on in a little bit. But they driving. All of a sudden, Todd Gurley gets the ball, running around the side, heading towards a pylon, and you see this flash of white because the Seahawks are in their road whites, and it's number 29, Earl Thomas, who is by far the best safety in the league, and it's not close. On basically the half-yard line, karate chops his arm. In a post-game interview, he said he learned that move from Bruce Lee. I am not making that up. That is Earl Thomas. And so instead of being a touchdown, which was the call on the field, they review it. The ball comes out and goes directly into the pylon, which is in bounds. That means instead of this being a touchdown, which is what was going to happen, Earl Thomas made it a turnover, Seahawks ball on the 20. Only Earl Thomas makes that play. Also, that rule is stupid. It still should have been the Rams' ball. It's not anybody's fault. It's just a dumb rule that if you fumble into the end zone, you turn it over. But I digress. And that's basically the story of the game. What kept happening is the Seahawks would move the ball a little bit on offense but struggle. But they actually did a pretty good job in terms of time of possession. Then the Rams would get the ball, and they'd move the ball pretty effectively through the air. They racked up 375 total yards. The Seahawks defense would bend but not break, and they would come up with these clutch plays time and time again. There were a total of 5 turnovers in this game. plus a missed field goal. All of those points are basically taken off the board for the Rams, and as a result, the Seahawks win 16-10. People are going to look at this, if they don't follow the team closely, didn't really watch the game super close, and they're going to say, oh man, what another phenomenal defensive effort for the Seahawks. No, I disagree with that completely. If that's the way you feel, then you're not really paying attention. The Seahawks could not get any pressure on Jared Goff. Todd Gurley only had 43 yards rushing, but he only carried 14 times. They continued to give up long plays in the air and on the ground. Tavon Austin had a run of 27 yards. Jared Goff ran for 22. Todd Gurley had at least one run for 11 yards. In addition to that, they gave up passing plays of 35 yards, 20 yards, 19 yards, 19 yards. So they're giving up big plays, something that never happens against the Seahawks defense. So even though the Rams only scored 10 points, and obviously I'm not upset about the turnovers, I don't know how much you can count on those in future games to bail you out. So more so than other games, even though the Rams only scored 10 points, the lack of pressure, the ability of the other team to move the ball really has me concerned about the long-term well-being of this defense. That being said, it's the Rams. Last year when the Rams only won like three or four games, one of them was against the Seahawks because they're the Rams, that's what they do. Their job is to spoil my Seahawks season. So I'm happy with the win, but man, this game is kind of the opposite of what you would think it is if you just looked at the box score.
Yeah, definitely well said. And you definitely don't have to explain quirky or bad rules to a Lions fan, my friend. I think we've literally seen everything from throwing a challenge flag on a play that's automatically going to be reviewed and being penalized for it to the latest fiasco against the Falcons. But we're here to talk about your team and what you already mentioned, Earl Thomas, also coming up with the interception in this game, one of two that Jared Goff threw. And when I look through this, I see that that Sheldon Richardson had the other interception. What happened on that play?
Yeah, well, and that's another example of how kind of, you know, just crazy and fluky the game can be. It was a screen pass that basically bounced off of Todd Gurley's hands and Sheldon Richardson, the sure-handed defensive player, I guess, that he is, comes up with a thing, and you see him go rumbling down the field, which is amazing to watch. I mean, he's a tremendous athlete, but man, he's a big boy. Watching him run the football is hilarious. Yeah, one other thing about Earl Thomas, and I'll be honest, I could go on and on about how terrific Earl Thomas is. I was watching the pregame coverage for the Sunday night game, and one of the hosts, Dan Patrick's, you know, they're recapping the game. He talks about future Hall of Famer Earl Thomas, and Tony Dungy, who I've always kind of liked, is like, whoa, future Hall of Famer. And they just kind of left it at that. And man, dude, Tony Dungy, if Earl Thomas is abducted by an alien today, he's the best safety of this generation and a surefire Hall of Famer. I don't know what you've been smoking since you retired, but like, man, get your eyes fixed.
Yeah, I definitely think Thomas is just at an elite level, but yeah, I was absolutely surprised. You know, a couple of, if you were going to tell me that one of the Richardsons was going to showcase his hands, I probably would have picked Paul, but it wasn't Paul.
I made a joke that because Sheldon Richardson came up with a fumble too that he ran back for a while. I think he had more yards on the ground than Thomas Rawls or Eddie Lacy today.
Yeah, just another muddled backfield situation. I know that's kind of a headache. So we won't dive too far into that one. But Justin, we really appreciate you taking the time to go through the game here. Pretty much played out like I expect. I figured this one would be close, just like you mentioned. 5-5 over the last 10 meetings. These teams, they play each other well, and we saw another case of that today. Another one possession game, ultimately with the Seahawks coming out on top, 16-10 over the LA Rams. And Justin, thanks again for taking the time to recap the game with us.
Thanks, Josh. Go Hawks.
Take care.
All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, taking over the hosting seat. I'm here with Josh, the Lions superfan. The reason why you get the two of us is someone's got to talk about that Jag-Steelers game because our Steelers fan is inconsolable and the Jaguars have celebrated a little bit too hard. So, Josh, why don't we go ahead and just start off. Jaguars win 30-9, something that I don't think anybody predicted. I think just about all of us had the Steelers winning this game. So, man, What the hell happened?
Yeah, just the beginning of this game, you know, you really the Steelers were driving the ball and moving the ball well on offense in the first half. And I really thought this was just a classic case of, okay, Big Ben and the Steelers are back at home and they're just going to do their thing. To answer your question, Justin, the question or the answer is the Jaguars defense is what happened. Roethlisberger ended up throwing 5 interceptions in this game, a couple pick sixes on almost back-to-back throws, just a couple throws apart. And that was really the undoing. It was just a brutal game for Roethlisberger, 33 of 55. And a lot of that yardage was in garbage time. And they just, squeaky wheel, got the grease, and Antonio Brown, 10 for 157. Very impressive. But aside from that, they really struggled to run the ball, which is kind of different. Jaguars have been kind of funneling a lot of action from their stellar pass defense, and teams have been having success running the ball. But not so much the case here. The Steelers really didn't do a whole lot on offense.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I'd like to just point out Antonio Brown. I think both of the pick sixes were targeted to Antonio Brown. After some of that drama, I wonder if maybe they were trying to force feed the ball to him a little bit, which I really think is a terrible idea. He's such a good player. He'll get open. You don't need to try and force it down there. It's interesting. I mean, the quarterbacks were terrible. I mean, Blake Bortles had a QBR of 58, which is not good. Ben Roethlisberger had one of half that, which is incredibly not good. On top of that, though, so it was basically all defense except, Leonard Fournette. Dude is a baller. 28 carries for 181 yards. Busted a 90-yarder. He had 2 touchdowns, one of which was this goal line run where the pile doesn't move. You know, the fat guys on both sides just slap into each other. So this dude, who's already like 6'6", 240, takes to the skies and flies over the pile. I've seen guys jump. For some reason, the Seahawks jump all the time. But like a dude this size, that was crazy. I think feelings were mixed about Leonard Fournette coming out of school. I really, really liked him. I know that some of our other draft guys really liked him as well. I know Neil in particular was a big fan, but a lot of guys didn't. And at least through these first couple of games, man, dude, I think Leonard Fournette is the real deal.
Yeah, you called it. I mean, half his yards came on that big breakaway, and you know that was in the fourth quarter when they were just trying to run the ball out. But yeah, I was equally impressed on his first. It's different when the nose of the ball is almost in the end zone, and you know you're going to dive in. I mean, I'm pretty sure this was like extra point territory. They were like 2.5 yards back, and Fournette just skied over. Yeah, that's very impressive, and that's. This is the blueprint. I mean, this is what they want to do, man. They want to just give the rock to Fournette. He's been a huge surprise as far as how good he's been in the passing game. He's been kind of an underrated receiver. You didn't see that in this game. He only had one catch, but he didn't really need to because they fed him the ball 28 other times on the ground. And this is definitely a wake-up call for the Steelers. If you're a Steelers fan, boy, I don't know. Big Ben at home is a thing, and Big Ben struggling on the road is a thing. But Big Ben throwing 5 interceptions at home, that's not what people are used to, and definitely concerning, that's for sure.
All right, final question before we wrap this one up. Both of these teams are now 3-2. Is Pittsburgh in trouble? Is Jacksonville for real?
That's a great question, Justin. I would only lean to the fact that we still don't know. And the only reason I'll say that is because of the division opponents that they face. The Ravens just aren't as scary as, you know, you would expect them to be. Of course, they did get a nice road win today in Oakland, but the Jaguars have a much lesser competitive division, I would say, as far as, you know, we've seen, teams around 9-7, usually the Texans winning that division of late. I would say that Jacksonville looks a little more like the real deal, but with Big Ben having all that playoff experience, I still can't say who's the contender and who's the pretender at this point.
There it is. Once again, Jacksonville Jaguars victorious over the Pittsburgh Steelers, 30-9. Josh, thanks for stepping up and helping me recap this one.
Absolutely, Justin. Always a pleasure. All right, next fan up on our game recaps is Don, our Baltimore Ravens super fan. Don, we saw the Ravens go into Oakland, who, yeah, they did have a backup quarterback starting today. But like I mentioned, the first thing I saw when I looked at this game was Ravens were already up by two touchdowns in the blink of an eye. So why don't you tell us about that? Sounds like they got off to a fantastic start in this one. What are your news and notes from the game?
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, yeah, we're against a backup quarterback in EJ Manuel, but you know the way our offense has played, you know, the past 2 weeks, it was a good win. You know, to bank off of what you said as far as the fast start, first play of the game was a 53-yard pass down the left sideline to Mike Wallace. Ravens kept driving. Terrence West had a decent carry, and then he was out for the rest of the game with a quad injury. They could score a touchdown with an end around to their third string tight end. He's number 88, but I can't even remember his name right now. He had a 2-yard end around touchdown, which was nice. Raiders get the ball. EJ Manuel has a short pass to Jared Cook, who then gets stripped and fumbles, and Jimmy Smith takes it back for a touchdown. So like you say, yeah, nice fast start for the Ravens. What surprised me the most, I guess, and I know Oakland's defense is not the best, but there was no sacks from the Raiders, which is very surprising considering our offensive line issues, and we had our starting right guard go down again for the game. You know, he didn't come back. We'll see what he does going forward. No sacks, no fumbles by the Ravens, including Alex Collins, you know, the running back, and no Flacco interceptions. So thankfully he breaks his streak of 10 straight games with an interception. Especially when it came to the fourth quarter, I mean, the Ravens offensive line shockingly dominated. They just kept running, and just ran off, you know, killed the clock. I got a couple field goals towards the end. You know, Buck Allen came up big time. Not a huge yards per carry game for him. But he just kept grinding it, you know, he didn't fumble it. He had his own touchdown. So it was worrisome, I guess, especially at the beginning because the Ravens were giving up huge chunks of yards on the ground. And they had some gaffes. You know, so Brandon Carr had a big gaffe for the Crabtree touchdown, but it had some sacks on him. Defense tightened up, and you know Ravens offensive line dominated with a run game. So all in all, you know, pretty good week.
Yeah, definitely was surprised to see Buck Allen get 25 touches again. I know that Terrence West is kind of in the doghouse there. He only saw two carries in this game, and of course, good for 17 yards. So a robust 8.5 yards per tote there. But yeah, it seems like he's kind of fallen out of favor as far as the Ravens are concerned. And speaking of the ground game, I thought the Ravens, you know, no surprise there. They have a very, very long history of, you know, limiting other teams' rushing attacks. And I thought they did a phenomenal job. You know, Marshawn Lynch was just due to get into the end zone, but, you know, he only had 43 yards and Rashard 37 yards. I mean, that's pretty solid. I thought that they did an excellent job limiting the ground attack and, you know, really kind of forced the Ravens to, or forced the Raiders, I should say, to pass a little more. And, you know, EJ Manuel, definitely not a world beater, but it sounds like you guys got a much needed win here, Don. And I really appreciate you stopping by to go over the game with us.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just glad to be here.
All right. Take care, Don.
All right, see you.
That's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you like this show, spread the word about us. Like us, share us, leave us a review. You can find us on wherever fine podcasts are sold. You can also email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @NFUPodcast. Check out our website, especially if you want to reach any individual super fans. It's got all of our Twitter handles. That's nextfanup.wordpress.com. With that, going to turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.